Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the First World Manila podcast. Magandang umaga, magandang hapon, magandang gabi. Buenos dias, buenas tardes. My name is Ramon Rodrigo Roberto Calao Cuenca, CFA. I am the founder and director of First World Manila. First World Manila. Solving the Philippines' deep-rooted problems. That's a new tagline I'm testing for this. And as you just heard now, that was our original national anthem in Spanish. I didn't even know our original national anthem was in Spanish until a few years ago, and I felt like I'd been deceived my whole life. But that's a story for another time. So let's go to today's episode. The evils of democracy with a question mark. So last week, as some of you know, I was in Cebu. I was there for a business trip. I apologize for the delay of last week's episode too about the senatorial candidates, because basically I was super busy with business. So I actually recorded it before I left, but I had no time to post it when I was in Cebu. So I ended up posting it back on Friday when I was back in Manila. So apologies for that. But yeah, it was a good one. Turned out to be longer than I thought it was. I remember saying in that episode that I was only going to stick to 20 minutes. But after I recorded, I realized the episode was over 40 minutes long. But I guess that's always what happens with this podcast now, is I tend to just talk and explain and also rant a little bit, maybe a little bit more. But I always start out very, very wooden, I think. But towards the end, I get more relaxed and comfortable, and end up just talking and speaking my mind about things. That's always how it happens here for some reason. Maybe if I continue with this, I'll be more comfortable and just on the get-go, just get straight into getting really intense and emotional and getting to the meat of the subject really quickly. Anyway. So when I was in Cebu, I had time to do a lot of thinking as well when we were traveling around by car. I did have a lot of discussions with a friend there about the troubles in the Philippines, despite our economic growth. And it was on my mind quite often right before my trip, I went to that senatorial candidate talk at the Manila House on the past Monday, and it was interesting to me because it's one thing to read about something, you know, you read about, you know, politicians saying this or that or this and that happening, but it's obviously in some way, and I don't think you can fully escape it. It gets filtered through the lens of a journalist. So there's always a problem of maybe, why don't I enlarge my picture here first? There's always a risk that someone's own biases will significantly affect the reporting. I mean, we have standards for journalism, but still we're all human beings. So it's one thing to hear the senator speak, and I was really thinking about what Bob Aquino kept saying, which I mentioned last week, which is that there are a lot of things that many of the senators, regardless of party affiliation, seem to agree upon. He didn't really mention which ones, but I mean, it sounds like good governance or in increasing or reforming the judiciary, I think, even allowing a reasonable amount of foreign investment. And I think, in my point of view, these are some things that you can't argue about, because we already have real life examples of that with China and now Vietnam, which is on its way to surpassing us as an economy. So why don't we just focus on those issues that we all agree upon, or the majority of us agree upon, regardless of our other politics, and get those laws passed and executed over a sustained amount of time? So someone was giving me an example of how it's not unbundled. So like, for example, FDI, which I've talked about previously, people have said, a lot of people are like, yes, we want, a lot of politicians are, for example, like, yes, pro foreign, increasing foreign direct investment, but you also have to make me like president for 10 years, you know, things like that. So it's not, why can't we unbundle all of these, all of these points and pass laws on and execute properly with the long term things that the majority of society agrees on? Is that so hard to do? But we, in other words, we have to learn how to compromise with each other. All of us. So it's not even just the politicians. I look at some reform movements here, for example, and it's like they have a 3-point or 4-point or several point system. They want all these things to get done, but some of those points are more political than others. So it'll never happen. People, both sides, I think both sides are gonna have to be willing to compromise. So why can't we compromise? Is it so hard to do? Why is there so much animosity or enmity in some ways? I mean, that's obviously, it's not exclusive to the Philippines for this happening, but one clue would be, and I'm going back to James Fallows' famous article in The Atlantic about our damaged culture. He says something, here we go. It says, and this is mostly like, basically, if you recall, his thesis is that the reason why we're poor and struggling is that it's our culture and our lack of nationalism. So I'm going to read a passage here which sort of explains or sums up in a nutshell why we have trouble compromising in a lot of ways and disagreeing or not being able to compromise and get things done. So here we go. But when observing Filipino friendships, I thought often of the mafia families portrayed in The Godfather. Total devotion to those within the circle, total war on those to those outside. Sorry, excuse me, total war on those outside. Because the boundaries of decent treatment are limited to the family or tribe, they exclude at least 90% of the people in the country. And because of this fragmentation, this lack of nationalism, people treat each other worse in the Philippines than in any other Asian country I have seen. Ouch. The truth hurts, doesn't it? So then obviously the next question is, how can we fix that? How can we sort of go past this sense of clannishness and really build a nation? Well, that's going to be really hard, because in this episode, I'm going to be digging in deeper into the roots of some of these problems, at least from what I've learned. So I've saved a lot of my college political science papers that I read. I went to the University of Chicago. These are many moons ago. These are very old, but I saved them because they were just so true about the Philippines. So I'm going to read you some. So this class I took had had a lot of basically the drive when it came to the Philippines, or at least the thrust or the thesis or the problem, the core problem we were discussing on with the Philippines, as it were, was that was there was a. There was a lack of strong institutions or bureaucracies in the country, and there continues to be one. So that basically, whether we pass laws or not, does it get executed? And as long-time listeners of this podcast know, that's always a recurring theme here. It's not just the theory; it's the execution. It's not just the passing of the law; it's its execution. It's proper execution over the long term. So let's get started. Here we're going to start looking at the roots of some of our problems and how that informs the way we should go forward and build a sense of society and community. So I'm going to be looking at three different papers here. Two of them are by a political scientist or a writer named Paul Hutchcroft. So one is Colonial Masses, National Politic, sorry, Colonial Masters, National Politicos and Provincial Lords, Central Authority and Local Autonomy in the Philippine, in the American Philippines, 1900 to 1913. This one is Oligarchs and Cronies in the Philippine State, also by Paul D. Hutchcroft. Here's another one by John Seidel. Philippine politics in town, district, and province. All right, look, just sorry, I'm sorry, I'm just looking at my notes here. So, the starting point for this look at these issues is that in a lot of pre-industrial societies, I think the vast majority, they have what you call patron-client relations. Normally, there's some boss or, someone that the community gathers around and follows, and he's sort of the guy who orders and gets things done. So, it's sort of like loyalty to one figure despite and no sense of overarching authority or nationhood. That's a very basic example of, or explanation of patron-client relations, but it's basically clannishness in a way, or just listen not and being loyal to whoever serves you most immediately. And theoretically, the way to eliminate that is independent rule of law. But do we have that? Anyways, so there was definitely sort of that kind of relationship going in the Philippines. I mean, basically all pre-industrial societies. And even in the late Spanish times, there was a development of a landed elite. So, and that didn't happen. That was actually a very recent thing, apparently. It was only after the economy, the Spaniards decided to develop our economy that there was clear crops and land holdings. So, I'm going to read some passages now from Hutchcroft. Okay, page 283. Here we go. So going back further, I mean, under the Spanish era, the government based in Manila was so understaffed that it had to rely heavily upon ecclesiastical personnel in order to extend its reach throughout the archipelago. So friars, right? I think we're all aware of that. They were in a lot of ways. There was 200 years of, so there was 200 years of deliberate planned isolation. Like there was no internal trade. We were just being run by friars, etc., etc. So in the late 18th century, there was a dramatic opening of the Philippines to world agricultural trade. So it strengthened the power, a local power of another sort, as increasingly powerful landed elites. Again, we have these sort of elite local landed elite clans in the provinces, with no really strong central government. And therefore, no really strong sense of a national identity or society. With an economic base outside the control of the central government in Manila, the circumstances were ripe for this highly dispersed group of prosperous local elites to obtain political power as well. Okay, so there's that. So there was already the stage was already set even under the Spanish period for us to, for sort of this what I'm going to be calling from now on for the rest of this podcast, clannish politics. Sorry, I made that up just now, but it works. Okay. 284. Okay. So it's interesting. So here's what happened when we became an American colony. So this article, so Hutchcroft puts a lot of the onus for a lot of our structural problems in government on William Howard Taft, who was basically the first, I guess he was he the first? The first, well, if not the first governor of the Philippines and the Americans, definitely the most important in the early period. So his thesis was that there was a, the sort of the characteristics that informed Taft's government of the Philippines were both expediency and ideals. So under expediency, he says this: anxious to win over both a cosmopolitan ilustrado elite as well as a broader group of local caciques that had, or so lo local bosses, local warlords, basically, that had, particularly in the vicinity of Manila, given strong support to the revolutionary effort, Taft and his associates not only drafted administrative reforms that envisaged the creation of strong local governments, but also made longer-term plans for the convening of a national representative assembly. Dot dot dot. As part of the bargain of benevolent assimilation, therefore, the United States began to provide greatly expanded opportunities for political power to elites that had already developed a strong economic base throughout major regions of the latter decades of the Spanish era. So again, land holdings. So there's that. 420, 421. So it's interesting because, and I'm going to be going over this point again in the later in this podcast, but it's interesting that basically the politics were developed before the bureaucracy in the Philippines, and it wasn't the case for a lot of other, for our neighbors, for example. So, and I'm quoting Hutchcroft again. Unlike in Thailand and Indonesia, where bureaucratic aristocratic elites descendant of pre-colonial kingdoms were strengthened by the 19th century commercialization of agriculture, the same process in the Philippines gave rise to a new class of landowners who were quite separate from the bureaucracy. Their economic base was firmly outside the state. So these just are the beginnings why we have a weak bureaucracy that it's very difficult to get things done and is beholden right now to political influences again, so which is why no matter how many bills are passed today, like it's a question of execution. And as we've talked about in previous episodes, it's the execution that matters, and it gets hampered by politics in the case of the Philippines, whereas that's less of a problem with our neighbors in ASEAN and Asia in general. It should be noted, though, that according to John Seidel, that land holdings weren't actually that big in under the Spanish period. It actually really only started the American period. So, revisionist, for I'm reading here again, revisionist historical scholarship, for example, has highlighted the limitations of the Spanish area elite's wealth, land holdings, and geographical distribution, and recast the timing of its emergence as a national oligarchy to the 20th century. So think about Rizal. I mean, his family owned some land, but not that much. And that sort of jives with what I've heard elsewhere, is that it was the friars who owned the most lands. I wouldn't be surprised if that was true under the Spanish period. But yeah, so basically, I mean, the stage was basically set for that to happen, and it really, this sort of oligarchical class really came to view in the American period. So I know a lot of people are brought up to think that the American period was, you know, the best part, the greatest, or that they were better colonizers, and I mean they did it, they were more efficient, definitely. But I don't know, they didn't really build that many that much infrastructure compared to, at least later on in the 20th century, compared to our other neighbors who had, like for example, Malaysia, who had much stronger infrastructure under the British and a stronger functioning bureaucracy. How is that for colonial mentality? Right. So again, going back to Taft and his fusion of expediency and ideals, let's talk a bit. We talked a bit about Taft's expediency of pacifying the Filipinos, but let's talk about his ideals. So here's a thing that most people don't get about the American colonization period. The Americans who came over to govern the Philippines initially were sort of these very conservative politicians, because at the time there was a broad-based reform movement in the US that was happening, with its figurehead being Teddy Roosevelt. Prior to that, in between Roosevelt and the Civil War, which happened a few decades earlier, there was a sort of a, like a not it was like basically a very low point for American politics, where basically I would describe the politicians there as less professional, and it wasn't really about ideology or anything. It was just about who makes money, who gets paid for what, or people pay off each other. That's basically patronage politics. So those kinds of patronage politics, politicians pre-reform were the ones who came to the Philippines to govern it. And so in a lot of ways, our current political issues are actually descended from a pre-reform American system of governance. So that's how deep-rooted our problems are. I mean, I can go into that further, but basically, it's like we don't even have the same kind of governance system that the US has. Think about that. Okay. Okay. So, I'm sorry, I'm just reading this here to see which notes I want to talk about. Yeah. So, as Hutchcraft says, in the Philippines, however, the major builders of the colonial state were, by the standards of their day, conservatives rather than reformers or progressives. It was in many ways an older version of the state that US colonials ended up implanting in the Philippines. An older version. Interesting here. Emerging from a system in which courts and parties still played a dominant role, it is not surprising that TAP explicitly set out to make the modern lawyer politician the dominant figure in Philippine society. Lawyer politician. It's interesting. So that was TAP's idea to have lawyer politicians. Running things rather than a bureaucracy, so basically senators, right? Because they are the legislative branch and pass the laws. Huh. Okay, next page. And it was also interesting is that so Taft also played a role in this. Again, he also brought patronage politics to the country. Because here's Hutchcraft again. At the same time that Taft was seeking to promote considerable autonomy at local levels and sound administration throughout the colony, he was also determined to assist in the formation and expansion of a favored political party, the Federalistas. Political party formation is not a normal activity for most colonial masters. That's like the British. Think about the British. They just leave the native aside, and they just do their they just build the they build roads and extract money. So in fact, Rizal has a good quote about that, which I'll read a bit later on. So, but unlike them, like the Americans actively were involved, at least Taft was, in political party formation. Anyways, so political party formation is not a normal activity for most colonial masters, but in the Philippines, Taft considered it an important element of his larger project of quote unquote political education. So here's the kicker. At a point in history where most colonial powers were building powerful bureaucracies in the capital and relying on prefectural systems to centralize control over the countryside, therefore, the American colonial government in Manila began the task of state formation with a pronounced emphasis on local autonomy and party patronage. So, politics over bureaucracy, basically. In terms of expediency, this strategy of building a state through compromise with established provincial lords was remarkably successful in enabling US colonials to defeat the Philippines' struggle for independence. as an effort to duplicate New England style town government, that's basically Taft's ideal. In a distinctly contrasting socioeconomic milieu, however, the strategy was quickly revealed to be a monumental failure. So again, you can't just take one form of government from one country and just implant it in another with a totally different context. Totally, I mean, excuse me. Context matters, as I've said before. Okay, and this is what I mean by the democracy. Is it evil in some ways? Because basically, we got democracy before we could even handle it, before there was even an independent bureaucracy which could get things done, which could execute and really run a functioning government on a national level. So, and there's a historical precedent to this. So, I'm quoting, and here I'm going to read Hutchcroft again. In Martin Schefter's insightful analysis, the historical timing of the creation of modern bureaucracies and the emergence of mass political participation is essential in determining the relative strength of a constitution. Sorry, the relative strength of a constituency for bureaucratic autonomy versus a constituency for patronage. So again, the timing of the creation of modern bureaucracies and the emergence of mass political participation. So the timing between the two, between politics and bureaucracy, which one comes first determines how effective the government is, basically. So I continue. He continues to state his nuanced argument in the simplest terms. If the formation of a constituency for bureaucratic autonomy has preceded the mobilization of a mass electorate, as in Germany, parties will be unlikely to control the administrative structures through spoils and patronage. If the timing is reversed, as in Italy, patronage-ridden administrative structures are the probable result. So again, if it's bureaucracy before politics, we have a more efficient government that gets things done. If it's politics before bureaucracy, we get a government that's really beholden to party politics, like we have now, rather than really getting things done over a sustained period of time. So these are how deep-rooted our problems are, based on these political scientists. Okay. So the power in our case lays with the legislative branch of government, the ones basically I reported on last week. They argue about this and that, and I'm not trying to say like all of them are evil. I think some of them actually genuinely want to help the country, but they're just, I mean, it's a system that has to change. Because you could argue about this and that, but it's because a bureaucracy is not independent from politics, and it's not autonomous, basically. We can't really get things done. So think about, for example, infrastructure. We are even with this, I mean, even with this current administration, apparently, according to some reports, we're behind schedule, the same as the previous government. We're behind schedule in the build out. Why? Because the actual execution is a political process as well. The bureaucracy is weak and it's politicized. Okay. So it's always like this, in every election, like whoever becomes president, the president brings in a cabinet of talented technocrats. It's always the case, we always say, oh, I don't like the people. Some people often say, oh, I don't like this or that president, but hey, his or her cabinet looks good. They're professional. They're technocrats. But it's a question of getting things done. And again, this problem transcends everybody. It's the entire system. Brought to you by William Howard Taft. I mean, so that's a more deep-rooted problem, and unfortunately, we don't really talk about an independent or autonomous bureaucracy as much as things like which was w much of issues that were being discussed, for example, in the senatorial debate last week, such as Cha-Cha. Because for me, those are sort of, and that just shows where the preoccupations of society lie, within these political debates, debates about form of government, which is really important. Don't get me wrong, it's very important, but that's a much higher level. That's like step two or three. It's not step one. It's a much higher, in my opinion, that's a more complicated and divisive problem that's not going to be solved right away. And we're sort of, and it's a political issue, basically. So the problem is, and the problem, because the problem is this, going back to our damaged culture, even if we do change, even if there is charter change, I mean, people are going to find ways to be corrupt because they have no, most people are, maybe not most, but a lot of people don't have a sense of duty to this country. I mean, and the debate highlighted like the pros and cons of some of these issues. So, for example, the debate between unitary versus federal form of government. On the one hand, it's true that you want to take power or limit the power of elites in the capital, for example, in Manila, and devolve some of the powers to local autonomy so they can better serve their parts of the country that they run. I mean, that's certainly a good argument. On the other hand, too, if you give them too much power, then you're falling prey to warlordism, basically. You don't know if you have if you can't really control them, local governments as well, they could, amass a private army, maybe. I don't know. So there's and so again, it's not that these issues aren't important, but they're like step two or step three. I mean, also examples, for example, presidential versus parliament. I mean, there are good, and I'm not taking a side in this one. Well, I think the parliamentary argument, the pro-parliament argument, has a lot of good issues, or excuse me, good points. But and one of them, but even if, for example, with a parliamentary system, you do have like a theoretically you, it's coalition building, which means you have to compromise on some things. And again, compromise is a good word. And really focus on policy, for example, which is good. I mean, that's the way it should be. I mean, I would totally agree with that. But then, that's in theory. But what if these so-called coalition governments that come into power just all decide to just be corrupt? It's a much deeper issue. So, I should also add that a lot of people like to point out, oh, this and that country are doing well, and they're all parliament or federal or whatever, right? But that might be true, but I mean, excuse me, statistics 101, correlation does not equal causation. Are these countries doing well because they are parliaments, or is it because of another factor, that and they just happen to be parliamentary forms of government? So, just something to think about. I don't want to get into that today. I mean, that's a very that's another that's another that's a talk for another time. Okay. So even then, excuse me. Correlation does not equal causation. So, yeah, that goes back to sort of the issue of independence in the bureaucracy, because theoretically, once there's a regardless of form of government, as once laws are passed, they have to be executed. I think that's more fundamental before we get into these other issues. So it should have been, I mean, bureaucracy before democracy. Unfortunately, we got under Taft, we got democracy before bureaucracy. There should have been a level of impartiality over politics. So, there we go. And I wanted to even so, I mean, and we go back to the debate all the way back to the 1800s, sort of the reformists versus the revolutionaries. I mean, this is even further, this is even deeper than that. So, I mean, I think the debate's been settled. So between the reformists, La Solidaridad, for example, and Rizal and Del Pilar, and et cetera, and the revolutionary Katipuneros, basically had one point of view that was reforms from the top, and another one which is revolution from the bottom. And I think it's and obviously the latter won out. So the Katipuneros won, and they got their revolution, they got their independent government right away, and look what we have now. We're still poor, we're still struggling. Meanwhile, Spain has the highest standard of, or excuse me, life expectancy right now, even more than the Japanese. And you for things like that, you need a strong form of government or strong state and infrastructure and bureaucracy to get those things done, which we do not have. Okay, so I think that argument has been settled over 120 years later. Okay. So, in other words, the road to independence should have been through reform and not through revolution. Basically, we're not united, we weren't ready for it. And that's always been my point of view. So, basically, democracy really is it's a good thing when the country is ready for it. But when it's not, for example, like in the Philippines, where there are strong social divisions and the timing is not good, where it's the democracy before bureaucracy, then democracy becomes an evil, I think, in my point of view. So tying it all back to the title of this blog, or excuse me, of this podcast episode. So what to do? How to fix this? Because these problems, clannishness, tribalism, weak bureaucracy, how do we fix that? Well, I mean, obviously, at the point of my podcast, one step is to get people first informed of these issues because it's not really being talked about in the public sphere. Secondly, I would one day like to start a reform movement for some level of bureaucratic autonomy, starting with small things like continuity in policy, which came up again last week in the senatorial debate. So the very, very first step is to fight for things like continuity in policy, which is a very, it's just a baby step, really. Okay. So we need to think about these more fundamental issues before debates that are highly, highly political. So again, let's focus on the issues that everyone agrees on, which according to Bat Makino exists. There are issues that pretty much everyone agrees on. So think. And I just want to share something from Rizal. So this is from Sobre la Indolencia de los Filipinos again. I've referred to this essay at least once before, but in the last paragraph, he actually says basically we have two. Either Spain gives a. Excuse me, I'm trying to look. Deseamos que la política sea de una voz franca y consecuente, altamente civilizadora, sin reservas mezquinas, sin desconfianzas, sin temores ni recelos. Okay, so basically, he said that the government should have been really should have been civilizing, basically really building education and really socializing people properly, so that there's a proper sort of building citizenship, basically. But if that doesn't happen, then you're saying this, or at the very least, o si no, explotadora, explotadora, tirana y egoísta. So, con un todo un sistema bien pensado y estudiado de cómo para hacerse obedecer. Okay, so either you have this really nice government where you really build citizenship, and, or excuse me, you really build citizens, or you create one that's just straight up no hypocrisy. You're just there for the money. If it's a first, then it's really the best situation. If it's the second, which is a pair. See, Rizal's being very cheeky in this paragraph. So, if it's a second one, which is a system of exploitation, which is logical, right? Then do it in a way where it's efficient, where you build bridges and roads, etc., etc. So again, building infrastructure which requires a bureaucracy, by the way, which goes back to, for example, he talks about the cómo lo hacen los ingleses en la India. So again, like the English do in India. So he's talking about this issue as well, that while that other colonial powers were already building infrastructure and then a bureaucracy, et cetera, that was efficient, basically. And he was saying that, so that even, and again, this is the funniest part about this essay. I think it's really funny. I didn't get it at first, but I reread it and I was like, wow, it's a very witty way to end the essay. So he was saying that in the first one, where you really build a citizenship in this country, we will love you and we'll be part of you and it'll be great, right? Again, he's a reformer. Rizal was part of the assimilationist cause with Spain. But if you just want to exploit us, then at least when we're independent of you, we won't be ungrateful because you gave us all these roads. That's what he's saying here. So, because he's saying here, esta política tiene la ventaja de que si no adormece por completo los instintos de libertad, al menos el día en que la madre patria pierde sus colonias, se guarda ella el oro recogido y no tiene el sentimiento de haber criado hijos ingratos. So he's basically saying, for option two, which is the exploitative option, where you exploit the Philippines, but you build an infrastructure and a working, functioning bureaucracy and government, even though you won't stop people from wanting to be independent because you're doing this, in the day when La Madre Patria, so Spain, loses its colonies, at least you'll have the money, and you won't feel like you created ungrateful children, so ungrateful independent colonies that are now independent. So it's a very cheeky way to end things. I just thought that was funny. So, all right. Today's Tagalog Spanish word is pensar or isip. So, the conjugation, let me just type it up here. Pensar. Conjugation. Here we go. So, pensar, to think. Mag-isip. So, and we'll just talk about the present tense. So, yo pienso. So, mag-isip ako. Or, nag-iisip ako. Tú piensas. Nag-iisip ka. Él, ella, usted. Piensa. Nag-iisip siya. Nosotros pensamos. So, nag-iisip tayo or kami. Vosotros pensáis. So, nag-iisip kayo. Ellos ustedes piensan, so nag-isip sila. So there you go. That's it. I think for the national anthem, I'll be playing that once a month. I think at the beginning of every month, probably. So first episode in February, I'll play it again. Just because it's cool, and I think it's a cool part of our culture. I mean, did you know that our national anthem was in Spanish originally? Again, I mean, putting Spanish back as one of our languages is a part of is my own personal project and my own personal advocacy. All right. Next week, ingat.